Welcome to the NLP Talks podcast, bringing you inspirational stories along with a good dose of potentially life-changing NLP strategies. I'm Laura Evans, multi-award-winning NLP trainer, and I'm on a mission to help you unleash your potential in business and life. I'm so glad you're here. Pull up a chair, listen in, and let's get started on revealing more about this transformational NLP toolkit. Hey, how you doing? I hope you're safe and well. Welcome to the NLP Talks podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. I can't wait to share with you and show you today's episode. Now, today's guest is the most amazing human being, Michael Cameron. Michael has spent the last 9 months going through all of the NLP training which I offer. And wow, what a difference. This is a story of true transformation, inspiration, and some really powerful life lessons. Michael grew up in a very strict religious background. Some might even call it a cult. At 17, he came out as gay. He was shunned by his friends and family, lost his job, was homeless, but yet he had the courage and bravery to seek out what being truly authentic meant for him. He had counselling, which really didn't help much at all, but he found NLP. He's now hugely excited to be getting to know the real him, exploring what that's really all about. And he is now on the most wonderful mission to help members of the LGBTQIA+ community live authentically. Michael is someone who truly now understands what living authentically is all about. I know you're going to really love the story. You'll hear I get emotional in a few places because it's such a special story to hear. I can't wait for you to hear some of his stories, his pearls of absolute wisdom and gold. And one of the key takeaways for me was Michael's phrase when he says, and you'll hear this shortly, what makes us different makes us beautiful. Without further ado, let's go across and listen to how life started out for Michael.
I grew up in a very strict, fundamental Christian religion. In fact, looking back, and many people do refer to this particular group as a cult, I was taught that if I didn't follow God's word as described by a group of men in America, then God would kill me. I was taught that from a very young age. In fact, even my thoughts, if I wasn't thinking pure things, God would kill me in Armageddon. I was taught that all my friends at school, right from a young age, that because they weren't part of this religion, they would also be killed in Armageddon. So I grew up thinking that you had to, it's very important to act a certain way.
How old were you when this all came into your consciousness about God's going to kill you if you don't have the right thoughts and do the right things?
It was from birth. That's all I remembered. Wow. It took me a long time. I was well into my 20s before I stopped believing that. So I always felt very different to the people that I socialise with. And that kind of teaching, it makes you think that the world is a very scary place. It's very dangerous. I was taught that anyone who is outside of this religion, whether they knew it or not, they were actually Satan worshippers, that they were evil. It's all very bizarre. But when you're young and you have that from life, it has an impact on the way you interact with the world, the way you talk to yourself. As I grew older, I started to realize that actually I didn't fit in quite even with the group in the religion. I couldn't work out, but as I got older, I realised that actually I was gay. I didn't know that gay was a thing at the time. I didn't know that anyone else in the world was that. I just thought it was me, and I thought God knew, and I thought God was going to kill me. So every thought I had, any urge, I would just kill it. I would just kill it. I would press it as much as I possibly could until it was buried so deep you wasn't even aware of it. And that's really exhausting, and it's constant. There's no safe place for you to relax, not at home, because obviously your parents are there. My parents were so strict that they would never allow that. And even your thoughts, you couldn't even be yourself in my thoughts. So at 17, it was too much, and I had to do something before my world crashed in. And at the time, I called it my confession, but now looking back, I realise it was my coming out, which is a much better way to put it, I think, much more accurate as well. So I came out. I had to go through a period.
For those people that when you say coming out, as in you publicly acknowledged your sexuality, like what did that actually
not publicly
coming out mean at that point at 17?
So at that point, it meant telling the religious leaders in our congregation
that you were gay.
There were a group of elderly white men who I'd known all my life, and it was particularly traumatizing itself. I had to undergo a form of gay conversion therapy, which clearly didn't work. And so I got to the point where I said, I can't do this. This isn't who I am. I know God is going to kill me for this, literally. But I've got to live my life.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was big. It was big.
I'm just thinking, right, if I was 17, you know, I mean, yeah, it's quite a vulnerable age, right? I mean, I know when we're 17, we think we're all grown up and everything, but like, that's quite a vulnerable age. And to be subjected to, I mean, I dread to think what was part of that conversion therapy, quite frankly, but to be subjected to that, it's, oh my goodness, Michael Blimey Riley.
Yeah, it was tough. And I think particularly as well, because I've been so isolated in my upbringing, I didn't know what the world was like. And I was very naive, very scared. So at this point, I was living with my family, but my mum and dad disowned me and my sister as well. So I had to leave the house. My friends, they were all in the religion as well, so they shunned me. I worked for someone who was in the religion, so I had no job, and I was just in a place where I didn't know what to do, and it made for some very difficult years. But life gives you these things, doesn't it? And you get through it. And I thought, right, I need to live the life I need to live, and I'm going to be who I want to be. And I'm going to get a career, and I'm going to get a house, and I'm going to find someone to love. And I thought,
just before you go on, right?
Yeah.
That is sheer determination right there, right? Like the world around you is basically saying, we don't want to know you anymore. You've lost your job. You've lost everything that you know to be, you know, your life. And you're stepping out into a world that you don't understand, that you've never really experienced, but set your focus. I mean, talk about goal setting on an extreme, right? You know, that you set your focus and went, that is what I'm doing. I don't care that God's going to kill me, which is what you thought at the time, but I can't live like this anymore. There has to be something else. And like, that must have been a hugely scary time to make that decision, and knowing full well that you were walking away from everything that you knew. Mm. I mean, like, am I right? I mean, I'm guessing it's like, I mean, I just see sheer determination and goal setting and things like that. But from a feeling perspective, that must have been hugely scary.
Yeah, it was. And I made a lot of mistakes on the way in my life. My life, really, when people talk about hitting rock bottom, I feel like I can sympathize with that. I know what that feels like. But yeah, it is a very scary, vulnerable place. There are lots of people who are out there to take advantage of people. But
where did you live? I mean, like, were you homeless? Like what happened?
Yeah, so, I was homeless for a period. And you just do what you've got to do, I think. It's just self-preservation and survival kicks in. And I just tried to do the safest thing I possibly could. There was no real plan. The only plan was like getting to the end of the day and being somewhere warm. Thankfully, I never actually had to sleep like on the street. So that was good. But so I had all this determination to live authentically. However, what I didn't realize was that my unconscious had learned a lot of lessons. It picked up a lot along the way. So whilst I was thinking I was being this this confident gay person who was living the life according to their own terms, actually I wasn't. I was still always trying to meet other people's expectations. Always. Every conversation I had with someone, I would be trying to be the person I thought they wanted me to be. And that went on for a long time. It impacted all my life choices. My big life choices were about what would other people think about this if I did this?
Something you learned at an early age, though, right? I mean, yeah. You know, the religious upbringing that you had made you focus on everybody else. I have to do, feel, think, act, align with someone else's model of the world. So, yeah. Like, standing back here, you can see how. Obviously, it doesn't make it right, but it's almost like like people pleasing, I guess, as we would call it now. But at the time, obviously, I'm sure that's not, you know, what it was for you. But wow.
Yeah, it was very strange because of course I'd learned that when I did finally decide to be myself and I came out, then I lost everything. So the lessons I'd learned had just been compounded by that extra lesson. So it became even more important that the friendship group that I was starting to make, or I like to call them my family, I had to still be the way. I had to be the funny Michael. I had to be the conversational Michael. I had to be the outgoing Michael. Even if I didn't feel like I wanted to be that, it didn't matter because I thought that's what they wanted from me. And I thought friendship came at a cost. So that rumbled on for a long time. I was working, I trained as a nurse, and I remember working one shift. And I was speaking to a young lady who had that day made a very serious attempt to take her own life. And I was talking to her about it. And she was distraught, as obviously. And she was saying that she couldn't get over being a lesbian. She couldn't face the shame of it. She said, even though I'm getting emotional talking about it, even though her parents loved her and they always supported her, she always felt like she was letting them down. She always felt that she should be ashamed of herself, that society didn't want her, that she was less, and she couldn't be who she really was. And I was talking to her, and I was thinking, I've never tried to kill myself, but that's exactly how I feel. I'm, to my core, I'm ashamed of who I am. And I had no idea what to do about that. Absolutely no idea. I didn't even really understand the full extent of it. So I thought, I need some counselling. That must be it. So I did some counselling.
Just before you carry on, I want to ask you so many questions. So when you had that experience with that young lady, how old would you have been then? Like, how many years after coming out was that?
I was in my 30s.
Right. So that's quite a chunk of time then between coming out at 17 and having this realisation that there was another phase of learning to be done. I don't know what you want to call it, but that dealing with that shame and everything.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's a good, 12 years where you were living for someone else's model, making all of those mistakes, exploring what was like, you know, just to give some perspective to this, because this wasn't when you were like, you know, you came out at 17 and you had this realization at 21, it was only 2 years. That's 12 years.
No, it's probably my late 30s, to be honest.
Right, so even longer then.
And the every day that goes past where you don't learn it, all your previous lessons are just getting stronger and stronger and stronger until you've got this massive fortress built around you mentally. How do you get rid of that? How do you deal with that? Well, I thought counselling, because that's what people do, isn't it? They go to counselling and everything gets better. So I went to counselling and he dug up something that I had buried deep, deep, deep down. We talked about it. I relived the trauma. I became devastated. Then after 50 minutes, he said, right, okay, so I'll see you next week. So I was like, oh my God, okay. So I was then once again in a position where I was having to put my life back together. And then the week passed and I was just about getting back to normal. And he did it again with the same thing or with something else. But we kept picking at it, but nothing seemed to happen with it. I was like, oh, yeah, that is how I think. Yeah, what are we going to do about it? I don't want to know what I'm thinking. I want to know how not to think it. And that was an answer that he could never give. And it was just too exhausting. It was too exhausting. And it was expensive. And I thought, no, I'm not throwing good money after bad for this when it's just upsetting me.
And that's exactly how I felt when I went through mine.
Yeah.
Exactly the same. And, you know, I mean, I dealt with it in not a particularly healthy way because I used to go and hit the alcohol. But, you know, but it's like you say, it was like 50 minutes of, okay, this is what you think. This is Pandora's box. Open, ping. And then you are left with, right, so how do I live the rest of this week till I see you next time when we carry on then? And yeah. Like you know, you get to a week and you're like, okay, I kind of, I'm back functioning fairly normally. And then ping, open it would go again. Yeah. And yeah, I my experience was very similar, obviously different issues, but very similar in the sense that it never really got anywhere. It felt like I was picking the scab every week. Sorry, it's a bit of a disgusting metaphor in the morning, but it was I know the problem's there. Let's like pick the edges of it, but let's not actually like fix it.
Yeah, 100%. Totally. I remember driving back from one of the sessions and having to pull over and just screaming, just because I had all this energy and I had no idea what to do with it. And the only thing I could think to do was scream. And yeah, I just felt like it was cruel, really. It was cruel. So yeah, so I abandoned that. But what I did decide at that point was to live authentically. And I didn't know what that meant, but I thought if I think that's what I'm going to do, then hopefully things will start to change. And if I do come across something that will help, then I'll be more susceptible to it. Then I did come across something. I remember Yaz, who's listening at the moment, she's a massive part of this because she signed up to do your course. And I remember her telling me about the NLP Masters course, what it had done for her. And I saw a difference in her. She was, it's really hard to describe because a lot of what happens inside and it's not always visible to the world, but I could tell she was different. She was more vibrant. And she, in fact, she continues to become more so and more so all the time. So she did the course and I thought, okay, that's what I've got to do. I've got to do it. Did I research who to go to? I didn't know. I didn't. It just felt, although what I did do was I listened religiously every night on the dog walk. I listened to a podcast.
This podcast?
Yes, this podcast. So I said on Instagram last night, it's so amazing now to be interviewed on it. I really feel like it's come full circle. And I really hope that this interview will help people the way that others have helped. So thank you very much for that.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here.
Well, yeah, me too. Yeah, so I did that and it didn't all make sense. Some of the things I thought were a little bit strange, like parts integration. I thought, okay.
So this is your practitioner course, so the first certified course you did, yeah.
Yeah, and then of course it all does make sense. But when you start off, it can seem a little bit strange, but I went with it. I went with it and I'm very glad I did. Yeah, and so that's how we were brought into each other's lives.
Wow. Like, honestly, and I say this quite often on the podcast, like, you know, one of the great things about NLP is it's content free. So, you know, when people get the results and people get the benefit, I don't need to know someone's backstory. I don't need to know what they've been through. And I, like you and a lot of other people, are hugely grateful that it is content free and we don't have to talk about all the detail of all the things that happened, you know, as counseling would need, because it's a content-led process. This is a content free process. So we only, for those of you listening to the podcast that haven't maybe heard some of the other episodes, when we say content free, what we mean is that when you're working with a client, or in Michael's case, when he was a student on one of my courses, we only need to know enough about the problem so that we can pick the right tool to be able to help. But it isn't an hour's deep dive into any trauma or any kind of, you know, problems, but yet people get results. And, you know, I've got trauma in my background and clearly you've got, you know, more than your fair share. And to be able to start to feel different, to notice that you think different, without having to go through some of those more traditional people helping. Like, it was a revelation for me. It really was. And what were there any kind of standout moments for you on that practitioner course? Any like light bulb moments or, you know, moments where you sat there and thought, you know, I'm so glad I'm here, or this is for me, or anything like that happened for you?
Yes. So I think the standout one is the day we did timeline therapy. There was a buzz about the group because none of us really knew what it was, but we knew it was going to be good. So there was part of me who was thinking, oh, is it a lot of hype? Is it not going to, are we all going to say it's good, but it's not going to, not actually going to work? But in contrast to that session with the counselor, I remember driving back after timeline therapy and just laughing and being so joyful and so excited. The fear had gone, the guilt that just eats away you constantly, always from the inside out, it wasn't there. And I started, that was the moment that I started to build a relationship with my unconscious mind. And I started to think of it as a friend. And as time's gone on, that relationship has grown and grown and grown. Whereas to the extent now where I don't think of my unconscious mind as a friend, I think of it as it is the essence of me. It is the most important part of me. And to go from a place where I would hate everything about me, not just looks, but even the way I would think, every thought would be against me. I always thought I was the most stupid person in the room. And I know lots of people think that, but that started to be lifted just with timeline therapy, all those years. And did we have to talk about any of it? Did we have to talk about times I was homeless? Did we have to talk about the pain of losing contact with my family? No, we didn't have to mention it at all. And the great thing is that I still remember all those things. I've still learned the lessons from all those things. But instead of thinking of those things as my trauma, I genuinely look back at them and think, that's what made me who I am. That's what's made me different. That's what's made me strong. And I can look back almost with love, if you know what I mean. I mean, obviously, I'd never want to relive that, and I would never want anyone to go through it. But I've got strength from it, and I'll always be thankful for that. And that was just timeline therapy.
Yeah. And that's just timeline therapy, because you and I know how massive this toolkit is. But just wow. I mean, that is just, you know, someone that's joining us live on the recording, that's powerful. That's so incredible. What a contrast. You know, it feels, and it's hard to describe, isn't it? Like when you've had a lot of stuff in your past, to lift that weight off your shoulders and to feel so different in one afternoon. I think that's the thing that also struck me. Like people go, oh, timeline therapy, that sounds like that's something you've got to do for like 6 months and, you know, and all that. And it's great, everybody gets these results. But, to get that kind of transformation, that's got to take a long time. And then we sit there and go, no, it was one afternoon. One afternoon, yeah. And you went from that to that. It just blows my mind. Like the number of times I've done timeline therapy with people now, and I'm still in awe at it. Mm. Just out of interest, so you've recently come in the training room to help me with a practitioner course. So because obviously now one of our master coaches, you came in. So you've very recently sat the other side of the table delivering that experience for someone else that you've just described. Like, what was that like?
That was incredible. I can't remember if I've told you about this, but when I was doing the practitioner course and we had the group of masters come and sit at the back of the room, I told Yaz later on that I remember looking at them thinking, one day I want to be there doing that for people. And then to be doing that was incredible. And what a privilege it is to do timeline therapy for people. The unconscious mind is such a magnificent and poetic thing. To see people's faces become lighter and for them to change and to know, obviously don't know the details of what's going on, but to know that something special has just happened to them because you've gone through it yourself. It's such a privilege to go through it yourself. As a client is incredible, but then also to know the skills to then pay that forward is just beautiful. It's a real privilege.
I agree with you. And I used to love it. You know, when I was a master coach before I became a trainer, you know, I drive to London to help because like you say, the sense of joy, the sense of pride, the privilege, like whatever word you want to attach to it, it is so special, like you say, to know that you've held a space for someone one afternoon of their whole life. And you've known the process to be able to facilitate them to make the changes, to take the learnings that they want to take. I'll never get bored of that look in people's eyes once they've done timeline therapy. Never, ever will I get bored of that. As you say, it is such a special experience. No, it is amazing. And as you say, and I've said this many times on the podcast series all the way through, you know, timeline therapy is the one thing in our toolkit that is so hard to describe. You're not quite sure exactly which bit of it made the most difference. It's just you come out from that afternoon, I felt cleaner, I felt lighter, I felt like the spring was back in my step. You know, just like you've described getting in the car, driving home, going, wow. You know, I remember one of our students, when they first did timeline therapy, came out and she said, it's like I'm looking at the world in HD, all the colours are more vivid. And there's so much more to see and do and experience. And yeah, just phenomenal. Just phenomenal. So before we started recording today, you explained to me, and I want you to explore this a little bit more for the benefit of everybody listening. But you talked about the fact that for you, now you've done all your NLP training. So obviously you did your prac, you did your coach, you've now become a master coach, and you've done, you know, all of those qualifications. Like, you described it as getting to know yourself and starting again, and that it feels like an exploration. Like, explain for you, bearing in mind your journey, you know, and all of that stuff you explained at the beginning of the podcast. Like, explain to people what that really means.
So a massive part of that is what was the breakthrough process on the master's course. That was incredible, because whilst the timeline therapy helped remove a lot of the barriers I'd already put up around myself, the timeline therapy helped me understand who I was and helped me design who I am. It helped. I talk about it as if it's getting rid of all the mental sludge that I've been carrying around, I've been wading through mentally all my life. Just getting rid of that and seeing actually what's there. And It's like I look at the world brighter, more positively. It's like opportunities were always there for me, but I never saw them, and now I see them. Things that I think, oh, that would be interesting. Instead of saying, oh, don't be so stupid, Michael, I say, oh, go on then, give it a go. See, you don't have to do it forever. See if you like it or not. And life's fun. It's really fun. It's interesting. It's exciting. I feel like it's an adventure. I used to live very much in the future. Like, oh, it'd be okay when I get a house, or it'd be okay when I've got a job that brings me this so much money a year. But I was never living in the moment, and that's what I do now. Obviously, you have to still work at it. You still have to bring yourself back. You have to be aware of your thought processes, but that's so much easier to do once you've got rid of all the sludge. And now I look for the learning in things. I think, well, this is where I need to be. Why do I need to be here? This isn't the situation I would have chosen for myself, but why am I here? What do I need to learn from this? And I think that comes from changing the way you view trauma. Oh, Rosie.
She always likes to get in on the news.
Can't blame her.
Someone must have walked past the front door. Apologies.
That's all right. I think that looking for learning has come from re-evaluating the way I view previous trauma. So instead of feeling like a victim, I now feel like almost like a superhero. It's like that's my strength. That's what's given me the power to be the person who I want to be. And I always thought I had to decide who I wanted to be. But that's not how it works. You just live and you just go where you want to go, try what you want to try, and you'll develop and evolve and grow. That's my model anyway. And I'm enjoying it so far. Whether that will change and develop, but probably that's okay as well.
Yeah, no. And I think you make a really good point there, because I think, like, when you have had trauma in your past, I think you're right. I think there's a way of looking at it. And I think, you know, yes, there is a process, a cathartic process, I guess, of needing to offload some of that. But I think how you do that is important. And I think one of the things NLP teaches us is that in order for negative emotions to disappear and to be released, we have to take something positive from it, which we call a learning, don't we? We call it, a learning. And a learning in NLP has to be something that's positive, i.e. not happy-clappy, but what are you going to do? It's got to be useful for you personally and useful for the future. And that's one of the things that comes out of timeline therapy, isn't it? But I think you're right. I think if you can start looking, and I think, I think you've said it perfectly there. You know, if you can start looking for learnings from things rather than getting frustrated by things or looking back and feeling those negative emotions, then actually that's when you can start to release some of that emotion, whether that's guilt, whether that's shame, whatever that is, and actually go, it's part of who has made me, as you've said. It's part of my life journey, but actually I don't need to be held back by it anymore. Like, I take what's useful from it, I learn from it, and actually less like crack on and live life. I guess, without wishing to go back to kind of pre-NLP too much, I guess that's quite a scary thought to think that you might have lived the rest of your life as you started your life in that very restrictive way.
What a waste it would have been. What a waste of this precious gift of life that we have. So it would have been such a sad waste of life that it would have been an unlived life. And I'll never go back to that. I'll never go back to that. I can't.
No, but I just think that's awful that, there are people out there that perhaps didn't have the courage that you had, that didn't have the bravery that you had, the sheer kind of determination at 17 to fundamentally change your life. And had you not had that, and there's so many people that both you and I both know that, courage and bravery might not be words that they would use to describe themselves, but something inside of you mustered up that bravery and courage to say, I can't live the rest of my life like this. And I just think, imagine you'd got to the end of your life. One of the things, people, talk, don't they, about, what were the last things? And you'll know more than anybody, what are the last things people say on their deathbed and all those things. Like, imagine a life lived like that.
Well, you look at suicide rates and depression rates within the LGBTQI+ community, they're staggering, because I thought I was the only one, but I am not the only one. There are so many people who are just living in shame, and it's slowly killing them. It's just, even if it doesn't kill them literally, which for many people it will, it kills the potential of who they could have been. I was part of that, I'm so thankful that I managed to get out of that. But that is now my mission. That's now what drives me to go forward with becoming as good a coach as I possibly can, so I can help people the way that I've been helped. Because I know that the things that make us different are the things that make us beautiful, and we have space for a rainbow in the community, and things are better with a rainbow. So it's my mission, it's my passion now to help people, even people who perhaps think, oh, I am living, I am out, and I am proud. Great, that is really great that you've taken that step. But are you really? We were chatting before we started recording, and I said that there's a lot of homophobic people within the gay community, because their hatred is internalized. Gay shame is a massive thing. They hate that they're different on some level, and that's the lessons that they had growing up from family, from society, that we are different. But I want to help people to celebrate that, not hide it. And that's what's so exciting about going through the Unleash Your Potential courses, because not only did you teach us the techniques, you really taught us the techniques. anyone who's gone through your course will have an incredible understanding of how to use the techniques at a master's level to be able to individualize a program for someone. And I that's another incredible honor for me. So I'm really proud to be able to help people do that.
And you are an amazing individual. You know, I couldn't wish for, you know, such an amazing human without wishing to embarrass you, but such an amazing human with such a big heart to have such an amazing toolkit, you know. And I think, you know, I mean, I get emotional talking about it, but it's like, Laura, manage your state. We're supposed to be able to do this. But you just think, you know, to think that you could have lived that old life. Mm. And that there are people out there right now that they may have turned around and gone, well, I'm out. I've told everybody I'm gay. I've told everyone I'm a lesbian. I've told everybody whatever. But then for them to get stuck in that intermediary section that you were in for all of those years, as in I'm out, but I'm living someone else's life. I'm living up to someone else's expectations of what being out means without them doing the final piece of the journey, which is what you've done, which is the shift into actually living authentically. And I think that's very different. And that's, it's not until I hear someone like you talk that through that I can see how so many people would get stuck in that intermediary section that you described. I don't know what you would refer that bit in the middle, but you know, the bit between 17 and late 30s when you finally came to realization that people think they're living their life, but are they really?
Yeah, it's like a limbo stage, isn't it? Or like a purgatory, bringing it back to religion again. It's that kind of, you think you've moved on from the hell that you lived in before, but you're still not in the golden place. But you think, oh well, this is better. This is better than it was. So let's carry on with this. But it can get so much better.
Yeah, just so brilliant. Now, listen, as with all the podcast episodes, I look at the clock and go, oh my goodness, where has this gone? So I just want to talk a little bit, if it's okay with you, about the coaching business that you are starting, because I think this is such an important mission. And I still remember the day we sat in the courtyard on the training course and you said to me, Laura, I'm thinking about helping these types of people. What do you think? And I'm like, yes, yes, yes. Yes, because there's so many people you can help. So for those listening, I've just taken this, Michael, off your Instagram account. And by the way, if you're listening to the podcast, at the end, Michael's going to share all his contact details. So if you want to get in contact, you can. So Michael's written on his Instagram account that he's got a passion for helping members of the LGBTQIA+ community live authentically. And this is obviously what you're now doing, and you want to help other people do the same. And I know there's a particular section within that community that you're looking to help. So, like, for the benefit of everybody listening, like, share what's going on, you know, in Michael Cameron coaching. You know, who are you looking to help, and maybe share a little bit about what you are doing?
Okay, yeah, great. So I'm still at a very early infancy stages of the coaching business. Because for the very reasons I said, I'm still getting to know who this new person is, and I'm still letting things grow very organically in lots of different areas of my life. I am working with one client at the moment, and there's another one lined up afterwards. I'm really interested in working with people who work similar to me. So people who are gay, people who had difficult upbringings, people who have lived their life, think they're living authentically, but actually they realise now that they've got to an age, maybe it's in their 40s or 30s, something like that, and they've realised, well, I've been doing all this, but why? I don't get any joy from it. I've got all the latest fashions, my house is decorated beautifully, I drink cocktails, I've got a great job, but is this actually what I want, or have I just been sold the myth of this is what a gay person is? I want to. So one of the clients I've got lined up, I remember talking to him, and the way he's a gay man, but the way he talked about gay people was really negative. And he would never say he was homophobic. He'd say he stood up for gay rights, but couldn't help but see that his internal belief system thought that it was full of gay shame. He completely thought that somehow gay people were inferior. And that was coming out just in his conversation. And you know me, I love all the linguistic stuff. I love the Milton model. That's right at that. Probably one of the most favourite things you taught us.
You are most certainly the king of language. I've got to give you that title in our training room, because nobody has enjoyed Milton model language patterns and all the other language patterns just as much as you have. So I think I need to give you that title.
Yeah, I'll take it. I'll take it.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Does it come with a crown?
It can if you want it to.
Great.
I'm not quite sure how I'm going to do that. I haven't got one here, but I'm sure we can get one.
Okay. Going back to this person I was talking to, just using some of those skills, it just interrupted his pattern of thought. And you could see his face. He had this realization he became aware of the belief system that he had inside. And he was able to then change that. Not massively, but it was a small yet significant change, just having a conversation over a cup of coffee. And well, he straight away was like, oh, this is clearly something I need to work on. And he signed up straight away. So I'm really looking forward to being able to work with him. I just going back to my breakthrough, one of the first parts was all about the linguistic models, and from the outside, it looks like a very peculiar way of asking questions. And I remember so quickly when Kat, who was my partner, was going through that, and she said, we'd been talking about it for a while, and she said, so do you think that's what the problem is? And I was like, what problem? I haven't got a problem, because it had already shifted so much, and we hadn't even done any of the techniques other than the linguistic stuff. And that's why I love it. It's just so beautiful. It's extremely elegant.
And I think that's the thing about, like, a lot of people love all the techniques that we have and they're fast and we do change and things like that, but the language stuff is just elegant. It is so elegant that you can have people get rid of problems, realize they have them, and then start to shift them just by learning a host of language patterns and ways of helping people to see things differently. And I think that's where you have so mastered, you're amazing at all, but you have so mastered the elegance of that language patterns and helping people cut talk, helping people see things differently just in a conversation, because that's how it feels, isn't it? To when you were talking about when Kat was your coach on your breakthrough, it just felt you were having a chat, you know, and then all of a sudden she says, well, where's the problem? And you're like, what problem? And without you necessarily realizing, you've had a significant shift in your thinking, your outlook, and that's just elegant, hugely elegant.
It is.
So this guy then, so he's basically sat chatting with you over a coffee. Obviously, you know these language patterns so well that you start challenging him gently and elegantly around some of his ways of looking at things. And then he comes to the realization that he's got a problem that he didn't realize he had. Now, that's going to be something, I guess, as you go on into your coaching business, I guess that's going to be something that you're going to be doing quite a lot of, because... But when we go back to my reference, this intermediary stage that you went through, you know, people are not going to realize that actually there is this authentic self that they haven't yet discovered. And, you know, and I think that's a very key skill of a master coach, a great coach, is this ability to, because the problem, I think, for all of us, me included, you, everybody, is we're all too close to our own stuff. And we get entrenched in a way of thinking and being in the world, like you said earlier, that is like, you know, you kind of settle for what you've got. It's better than what you had. It's not brilliant, but it's all right. And actually helping people to realize that there could be an even better life that they're not living. You know, that's a skill, right?
Yeah, 100%. It is a skill which you elegantly taught us. But I know just how important it is to guide someone from that stage onto the next stage where they can live authentically, where they can be true to themselves, they can get to know themselves. I know how important that is because I've lived that. And that is what's driving me at the moment. And I want to be an example to people. That's why I'm letting myself grow. I'm exploring life. I'm doing things that bring me joy. And I've just been able to help people then do that themselves is going to be incredible, because it's not difficult. It's not difficult to do. And that's the incredible thing. All these people are walking around hating themselves, depressed with themselves, ashamed with themselves. It's so simple to turn around. And all you need is the tools. And I can help people do that. Yeah, that's worth getting up in the morning for, isn't it?
Every morning, to be able to do that. Yeah, oh my goodness. Like, I just can't wait. I absolutely love being on the sideline cheering everybody on that I've trained. And I think you've got a real gift. I think you've got a natural gift. And thanks. to have this toolkit to be able to explain to other people, you don't have to go through what I went through. Actually, I can shortcut this for you. I can help you get there faster. I can help you to get to the point of living authentically. And I just can't wait to hear of all of your client successes and to hear as you continue to get to know the new you and to start to explore helping other people to do the same. And, you know, I think it's such an important mission. And I genuinely am so proud of what you have already done and what you are going to go on to do. And it is so desperately needed. And I really hope that loads of people get to listen to your story, because I think it's so powerful. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
And for
being so open for, because I guess there's probably a time in your life where you probably couldn't have even told that story.
100%.
Yeah. And you've just sat here for, 45 minutes or so with me, and you've just recounted all of that story without the trauma, without all of that, almost not matter of fact, but in a way that says, actually, here's who I am now. And that has made me who I am. And now I want to do the same for other people. And it is such an inspiring story, Michael. It's just been amazing. So thank you so much for sharing it. I know it's going to help a lot of people.
You're welcome. I hope so. Thank you for giving me the opportunity, because I really want to get this message out to people who were where I was in that state, because life can be so much better. It can be so much better.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm going to steal the quote that you've got, which you said that someone's put in that's like watching live now, your quote of the things that make us different are the things that make us beautiful, which I just think is amazing. Anyway, right, Laura needs to control her stay and go. So, Michael, if there is someone that has listened to the podcast today or is listening on all the various platforms that this is going to be released on, if they have enjoyed listening to your story and it's resonated with them and they would like to reach out to you to explore maybe working with you or anything like that, what is the best way for people to get hold of you?
Well, they can contact me via Instagram. That's Coaching Cameron, or they can email me at hello@michaelcameroncoaching.co.uk.
So excited. So go and check out Michael's website, folks, and drop him an email. And I know he'd be delighted to hear from you, I'm sure.
I certainly would. Yeah, 100% would.
Cool. Michael, so you may or may not be familiar. Well, you will be, because you've listened to a lot of the episodes that we always end on a quick fire round, which yes. We don't prepare for, that you probably forgot we were going to do.
Yes.
But it's like, oh, yes. So I'm going to put you on the spot and I'm going to fire some questions to you. And let's see where we go to. So, Michael, if you could give your younger self a piece of advice, what would it have been?
Your opinion is the most important over all other opinions.
Amazing. If you could imagine yourself in 10 years' time, in just a couple of lines, what does that look like for you when you get down there?
In 10 years' time, having built a community of people who love themselves and live authentically.
I love it. If you could describe your experience with Unleash Your Potential in one word, what would you say?
in one word.
You said I
knew this question was coming up from other ones, but I forgot the word that I thought of. I would say explosive. It's like the Big Bang. Everything's new from that.
Amazing, amazing, amazing. Michael, thank you so much for coming on the show. I know your story is going to inspire a lot of people, and thank you. And I love the whole idea of living authentically. And I think that is such an amazing mission to be on. Obviously, I'm going to see you soon anyway, but I wish you every success with the business. I know you're going to be amazing. So yeah, just before we shoot off, I just want to say a massive thank you for those of you that have tuned in and that have listened to the podcast episode. Remember, if you haven't already, go across and check out our Facebook group called the NLP Talks Podcast Community. Come and hang out with us over there. And if you're interested in finding out more about the courses that Michael has talked about today, so our NLP practitioner course through to our certified master coach program, then please go on over to our website, unleashyourpotential.org.uk, in order to find out about the courses. And of course, there's loads of stuff on YouTube. And as someone has just said on the live feed today, what a completely uplifting way to start the day. So, Michael, lots of love to you, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you. Bye for now.